Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Dark Hearts.
Hey, Dark Hearts. It's
Welcome
been a
to
while.
The new year. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy New Year. We haven't talked to you since last year. Oh, I just needed to, you know, throw out the cheesy dad jokes.
You know, it's fine. Yeah. You know, first of all, thanks for being patient for us. We had originally planned to just keep trucking through, but note to selves for the next time this holiday rolls around, we maybe just plan on taking that time off.
Yeah. I think it's so busy anyway. And then I feel like it's just normal that people are just so like run themselves just down from everything. Mm-hmm. And then they get sick and it's like things piled up and then the weather doesn't cooperate with traveling and it's just a lot. And so, yeah, we had high hopes that we could somehow pull through for you guys. So thank you for understanding. Yeah. I don't think anybody was mad about it. So
listen, if they were, no one said anything. So at least thanks for keeping it to yourself if you were mad at us.
Yeah, appreciate that. So
we appreciate that. Just like also we appreciate our patrons, Luis and Jillian and Laurel. Thank you guys. We haven't forgotten about you. The stickers.
We're just getting those ordered. So we'll get those to you. And we know some of you that we can just hand them over. And Luis,
I know.
We'll be sending you.
I know. Louise, we really do appreciate you so much. You've been with us from the beginning.
You're amazing, honestly. I love anytime I see anything from you. So
I know. It's such a delight. So yeah, hopefully you guys all had lovely holidays. I don't even know. It was so busy. I'm like, I haven't worked since the 19th of December. I don't go back until the 7th, I think, whatever Saturday is. I don't feel like I have. Like, I don't know where that time has gone. We hosted Christmas Eve and Christmas at our house and stuff, and it's just been
a whirlwind.
Yes.
It is such a crazy time, and I feel like every year it goes by faster and faster. And I love Christmas, but it's just like, it's so much, and I don't know. I just feel like the expectations are always set so high, and you feel like as a mom, you have to deliver this magic experience, like overall. And it's just a lot of pressure, you know?
It is. It's so much. So, you know, hope you all made it through. It was definitely.
It can be a really hard time, too. You know, as much as I love it for a lot of people, it is a really hard time.
Yes.
So we hope you guys made it through, too. I want to say we're on the upswing of, like, you know, summer coming, but in spring, but not really. We're through the holidays. That just making it through there is hard enough. So
listen, I have my kids' birthdays coming up now, and I almost dropped the ball on planning anything for them until it was like a week before Christmas. And I was like, oh my God, I've completely forgotten about their birthday. And even as I'm like writing out my January calendar, I almost forgot to put, I have a weekend set aside for their birthday party. We do a joint right now because their birthdays are between each other. You know, we go right
so
in the
close,
middle.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. At least until they're a little bit older and stuff. But even as I'm writing out the monthly calendar for January for everyone, I forgot to put their birthday party down, and I was like, oh my God,
I know.
Not,
it's just a lot. Yeah, anyone who has a birthday between like November and January, I mean beginning of February even too.
Yeah,
I feel for myself because my daughter just had her birthday on the 23rd of December, and it was like, I don't even know what was birthday and what was Christmas anymore, you know?
Right,
we do separate it and keep it a whole its own thing, but gosh, feel for everybody that has to also deal with that. So
yeah,
and hopefully nobody had travel plans that got canceled. I mean, I'm sure somebody did out there. Anyone with Southwest?
My husband's middle brother, who we visited over the summer, who's in the Navy, he was actually supposed to come over New Year's weekend.
Aww.
But he was one who got canceled. But listen, don't quote me, I'm bad with the military stuff. I think he's like landlocked now. I think he has like so many years where he's at sea, and then so many years where he doesn't deploy or go overseas, he stays on base. And so I think he's landlocked now, so we're hopefully gonna get to see him in the spring and stuff. But yeah, he was supposed to come and that got canceled.
It's just terrible, all these things. I saw people miss their own parents' funerals and weddings and stuff. It's just so sad. So I hope that none of you guys had to experience that firsthand, but
yeah,
I'm sure somebody did, because it seems like so many people were affected by that.
Yes. Oh my goodness, it was so much. I think they're being investigated now too, Southwest or something like that, because like they took all this money during the pandemic, but then it's like somehow their computer system never got updated.
Yes.
Just like, what did you spend that money on?
Yeah, they never upgraded it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, so that CEO is probably having a fun time right now.
Oh, I bet. I bet. So, you guys, it has been a while. I will say this episode's probably gonna be a little bit on the longer side because there was so much more to this case than I realized as I like went into it. And I still left things out too. Like, I mean, there were like little details. I'm like, okay, it's not really super important. But should I just like dive right in then?
Yeah, I don't even know what state we're doing or anything, so I'm excited. It's just
did you forget? Blind. I know, it's been so long. Do you remember I said I'm covering something that is one of my worst fears, which is to be murdered by my child?
Sorry. Correct. I just I always will know that that's your biggest fear, and I think it's funny, but it's actually not, because it actually happens more than you think.
So in this listen,
your kids love you, you're fine.
Yeah, we're in Omaha, Nebraska this time.
Oh snap, I didn't know that. Okay.
And this is an older case that's solved, but there's also an unsolved aspect to this. So I feel like this is one of those cases that, because of the time frame it happened in, unless you've like from Omaha and you've lived here like your whole life or whatever, you might not know about it. Cause like, I didn't actually know about this case until a couple years ago when I went on like one of those haunted tours, you know, in the fall. And we drove by the house because the house where this all took place is still very much there. I didn't look into detail, but I'm pretty sure people are living in it.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
So this is the case of Leslie Arnold, who at the age of 16 murdered both of his parents. And I'm pretty sure he was a junior because he was born William Leslie Arnold, but it seems like he went by Leslie or Les. And his dad was Bill Arnold, so I'm assuming his dad was William, you know what I mean? So that he was probably a junior. But his mom, then her name was Opal. And now it was hard to try to find too much about Les, like his birthday and early childhood. I did get a lot of my information from like a 3-part Omaha World Herald story that ran in September of 2017, as well as a little bit of information from a Lincoln Journal Star that was from August of 2006. But I will tell you that in order to read any of these, you have to subscribe.
I hate when that pops up when I'm trying to read news. I mean, I could just do it, but
especially because I know I had read this 2006 article before when I first found out about this case a few years ago, and it was free then. And so I did do like, they had like 6 months for $1 like total. So I did that, but I need to make sure I go in and cancel those both.
And what year did you say that this actually happened? Or did you say,
I just know
you
said
that. Oh, okay. Cause I saw their articles that you had read. So I was like, did I miss that part? Okay.
No. We're getting there. So anyways, so Les's dad, Bill, he owned the Omaha regional office of Watkins Products, which was a door-to-door sales company that sold spices, household cleaning products, and the like. And so this is in the 50s, actually.
Oh, okay.
So in the 50s, this type of business is pretty popular. So Bill did pretty good for himself. And Opal, as was common of this time, was a stay-at-home mom. So, you know, picture like Leave It to Beaver, if you've seen that, like that whole June Cleaver and stuff. Except it sounds like Opal maybe wasn't as nice as June Cleaver. We'll kind of get into that. So they lived in the Exarban area of 66th and Pacific, which, if you're from Omaha, if you're not from Nebraska, Exarban is Nebraska spelled backwards.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, it's kind of a cool word. And when you realize it's Nebraska backwards, it's like, oh, but like once you live here and you just know that, you kind of forget and you don't care.
Yeah.
Because it's a weird word.
It is. And like the Exarban area now, like where this house is close to, it was close to like what used to be a racetrack, but now I think is Stinson Park down in that little area. I used to work down there at a chiropractor's office, and it was a neat little area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exarban's a pretty cool area. I mean, obviously now it's changed a lot in different areas, but like it's cool.
They've it's blown up in the last several years, and parking is a bitch.
Yeah. Like, but it's, like, the place to be, like, the up-and-coming, everybody wants to be in Exarban, so it's fun.
I haven't really gone down there much since I stopped working down there, but there's a lot of great food places down there.
Heck yeah. Oh, so many.
Yeah. So anyway, so they lived in Exarban. I know. They lived in Exarban off of like 66th and Pacific. It's said that Les was always a high strung kid. Like, he got into a lot of trouble in elementary school for like behavior stuff, but it seemed like as he got into like middle school and high school, he learned to control his emotions better, at least at school. He was fairly smart. He was like a B average student who was well liked by all of his teachers. And at the time of the murders, he was a junior at Omaha Central. He was he was in the ROTC, which for those who aren't familiar with is like military program type thing for kids who want to go into it. I think if you stick with it long enough, like if you enlist, then you're automatically like a higher rank than if you were just enlisting.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. I think that's what it is. But he also was in track, wrestling, and on a baseball team. However, his biggest passion was music, and he played the tenor sax in the marching band. Apparently, he idolized Elvis Presley so much that he even styled his hair like him.
Oh. Well, he sounds like a super, like, involved kid with activities, too, so
yeah,
it's interesting to see where it's going, but...
Yeah, right? So you're like, okay, like, how does this, like, it's not like he's a loner, like, you would typically think in these situations and stuff. Well, at home, things were different. His younger brother, whose name was Jim, so I think he was 13, I think he was about 3 years younger, he said little things would set Les off. I guess he would build, like, model airplanes and stuff like that, and if it wasn't going right, he would get so frustrated he would just destroy it.
Okay.
And, like, another example was, like, he was waxing the family's car or something like that, and the wax wasn't
running
it properly.
Something very 50s.
Yes. And so he punched the, like, roof of the car and dented it.
Okay.
Jim also said that Les would abuse him often. Like, he would put socks on his hands and then punch him, and, like, the socks were so they wouldn't leave marks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and Jim is quoted as, right. So Jim's quoted as saying, "I always had the feeling he didn't understand why mom and dad had me when they already had him." So it sounds like, one, we have a temper. Two, we didn't like becoming an, you know, not being an only child anymore.
Yeah.
Jealousy. It also, yeah, it also sounds like Les had a lot of anger and resentment towards his mom specifically. There are, like, I guess, conflicting accounts of, like, the type of person Opal was, but everyone does say she ran the household and she called all the shots. Like,
that's crazy, which, too, for back in the 50s.
Yes.
I mean, because that's not common in the
50s. No. It sounds like, just from what I gather from these articles, and mind you, a lot of this is stuff coming from Les later on, which you have to take with a grain of salt. But it sounds like it was very much one of those things of, like, the strong, domineering woman and the browbeaten husband, you know, that kind of thing.
Mentality, yeah.
Uh-huh. Because Les even later tells a psychologist that she ruled the home in a very domineering and arbitrary fashion, and he was often the victim of her controlling ways. He claimed that she once made him mow the lawn 3 times until it was even enough for her. He also says that she favored Jim over him and never supported him in his sports. She also made fun of him and his love of music, which a neighbor did note that Jim did seem to be the favorite child. Like, they treated him as if he was an only child. So
you could see where some of that anger comes from. I mean, in that sense, but
right.
Not that it makes it okay to, like,
bully your
brother, but that's messed
up. Yes. So once Les was in high school and could drive, there were then many arguments over the car. He said his mom would often tell him he could take it and then change her mind at the last minute. And then the other big cause of tension between Les and his mom was, of course, a girl. It was his girlfriend, Crystal, and she went to North High. And now Opal didn't think she was good enough because her family was quote-unquote trash. And the reason why Opal felt that Crystal's family was trash was because her dad was a truck driver.
Yeah, that's like, that does it for ya.
So, jeez. Yeah. Dang.
I mean, okay. Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
judgy?
Right. Judgerson. Which, very much judgmental time frames, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's hard to be like, oh my gosh, because back then people were, the mindset was a lot different.
Uh-huh. And it's still sad, a thing, though, but that... it sounds like they were for sure, like, upper middle class, you know, okay. Maybe not quote unquote rich, but dad had a successful business he owned, you know?
Right.
So
they're just looking at, like, a very blue collar, like, nose up in the air type thing.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So Opal also supposedly kicked Les out of the home on like several different occasions because of his relationship with Crystal. And I guess she even kicked her husband out on occasion as well. But it sounds like
cold, savage. Yeah. Wow.
And Opal, that's where okay. It's like, we have this whole, that stereotype of the domineering wife and the browbeaten husband who's meek and mousy and just goes along. And it sounds like Bill, like I said, he was pretty mild-mannered, and I guess he had told Les they just had to deal with it for the sake of keeping the family together. And, you know, it's like one of those things, because, I mean, 50s divorce, that wasn't...
Oh, yeah. It's like a public, in the public eye type thing, yeah. No,
especially if they were up that upper middle class, like, appearances are everything.
Oh, yeah.
Les also claims that his family members told him that Opal had been hospitalized for a quote-unquote nervous breakdown, which is what they classified mental illness as then. And honestly, I'm surprised they didn't just say she'd been hysterical or something, because I feel like any of that stuff was claimed to be that. So it sounds like maybe, and there's no clue, but Opal could have potentially had some mental illnesses that then maybe Les could have had as well. You know, these undiagnosed things. True.
Yeah, because that was not even a thing, so who knows?
Yeah. And, you know, so his younger brother, Jim, he will say later that a lot of what Les told the psychologist was slanted in his favor, which, I mean, yeah. You've been arrested for murdering your parents. Of course you're going to play the woe is me card.
Yeah.
But Jim says that a lot of the times that he was supposedly kicked out was actually Les running away to go be with Crystal. And I guess he did this one time supposedly to skip a family trip too. So either way, no matter the actual truth of it, it sounds like there definitely was a lot of tension between Les and Opal. And that's not to say that she deserved to be murdered, but it sounds like this was kind of what led up to that.
Yeah.
So then we come to September 27th of 1958. Les had plans to take Crystal on a date in the family's new Mercury car. And in the morning, Les is on the phone with Crystal, and it's one of those corded phones that was long enough, so he took it to his bedroom and closed the door for some privacy. But this apparently angered Opal, who threw open his door and was calling Crystal trash and all of these things. Yeah, which led to Les saying she would regret it if she wasn't nicer to Crystal. So Opal tells him he can no longer take the car. They continue to argue. Les punches a wall in the kitchen or something like that, and Opal tells him to go to his room. So he does for a bit, and then he comes back down and they argue more. And then she tells him to leave at some point, and he does to try to cool off. But when he gets home, he says he returned and got a crazy idea. So he went to his parents' bedroom, got a 22 caliber semi-automatic Remington rifle, which...
Because that was just laying around, probably.
Yeah.
In the 50s. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sounds absolutely. Like it was just in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to the kitchen then to confront his mother again. And so this was around 2:30 in the afternoon. Les claimed he originally had no plans to shoot, but just wanted to use the gun to show his mother how serious he was. And she looked at him and she laughed and said, "What are you going to do? Shoot me?" So he did.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yep. So
piss him off, why don't you?
Right. It's just, it's one of those things that it's like, I don't know. It's so hard to know what's true and what's not, you know, because.
That's true.
We don't have anything like. It could have just been normal. Yeah. It could have just been like some normal teenage parent
angsty
right. stuff, I mean, we do have the one neighbor saying, yeah, they treated the younger son better. But, I mean, I don't know. It's so hard to know.
Well, and if they had problems with him anyway, and he had that gun, she probably thought, like, what parent thinks their kid is actually going to do that? I mean, there's a lot of signs, but...
if my kid was pointing a gun at me, I'd be like, oh, shit,
I know. I would. Yeah, I wouldn't be like, uh-huh, are you going to shoot me? Especially knowing if the gun is out and loaded, like...
Well, and whether or not it had been loaded in the closet or not is something we'll kind of come back to.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Oh, didn't think that would even have had anything to come into play.
No.
Well, what do you know?
Okay. So he shoots her, she falls to the kitchen floor screaming, and he ended up shooting her 6 times in the chest.
Dang.
He told the psychologist later that he didn't want to hurt her, but he just kept hearing her laugh at him. And soon after this, Bill, the father, comes home from the grocery store, and when he sees his wife, he asks Les what he had done, and he went for him. Which, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Les ended up shooting him 6 times as well. Which, a part of me wonders, like, if everything that he said was true or mostly true, like, I wonder if there was some, like, resentment towards his father, too, for not sticking up for him. And
right, for letting it happen.
Yeah. And again, I'm not saying that this justifies or, like, trying to victim blame. It's just,
right,
you know.
You're trying to just figure out the reasoning,
the psychology
in his brain
of it, yeah. You know? You're like, it feels like so much more could have happened there. But
oh, absolutely. Brother wasn't home, though, Jim?
No. And I'll get into that a little bit. But his brother was actually at work at this time.
Because it makes you wonder if had he been home, would he have killed him?
I feel like he probably would have. But
I feel like he would have, too. Because he was, like, getting rid of every...
Yep. I don't everyone. Know. He was pissed. I don't know that I feel that he had planned this, per se.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he went through and like, I'm going to kill my mom, I'm going to kill my dad, I'm going to kill my brother. Especially because, we'll get into it.
It just sounds like an episode of Snapped, you know?
Yeah, like it sounds like he finally snapped. So after killing both of his parents, Les went to the living room, broke down and cried. He had a panic attack and he thought he should tell someone, but he didn't think that they would understand what he had been through. Which, yeah, I mean, you killed your parents.
Yeah.
And it's not even like it was in self-defense.
Right.
So, like, it's not like they had been physically beating you and starving you and stuff. So, yeah.
Correct. That's weird.
Yeah. So, eventually, he dragged his parents out of the kitchen and into the basement. He rolled up the bloody kitchen rug and stashed it in the garage. And then he called his neighbor, Ruth Grossman. And he told her that his parents had to leave on a train suddenly because while his grandparents had been traveling from Nebraska to California, his grandpa, who had a failing memory, got off in Wyoming and wandered off and they couldn't find him. So his parents left on the train to go help find grandpa.
That's an elaborate story. Wow.
Right? So he then asked her if she could look after Jim, who had been working at the Exarban Rodeo at the time, which was just near the house. And now Ruth Grossman, they were all close family friends. It sounds like they used to be neighbors and then they moved a little bit, but like this was like a super close family friend. So when Jim gets home, Les met him outside and took him to the Grossmans. So Jim didn't suspect anything. So this is where I think if Jim had been home, he would have killed him just because
he was there.
Well,
and if he would beat him up anyway, he probably thought, what's another one?
Well, and if you've already killed your parents and then your brother comes in, I feel like at that point you're in this mode of, I just have to get rid of everyone.
Yeah.
But I think once...
No witnesses.
Since he wasn't there, you know, he could have easily lured him inside and killed him too. So this is where I don't think this was a planned thing per se. Do I think that maybe he had fantasized about killing his mom sometimes? Probably. But I don't think he necessarily ever fully planned to go through with it.
He probably just literally snapped. And
yeah, so that's where I think...
Just pissed him off and enough is enough.
Yeah. So, you know, because he could have killed his brother too, but
he could
have
waited
plans
for him to come home. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then after dropping Jim off, Les then got ready and picked up Crystal and her brother, and they went to a double feature at the drive-in theater. And after that, they went to a popular burger joint and hung out there. And he said the entire time he was with Crystal, he did not think about what he had done. So,
wow.
Yeah. However, it's a different...
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, maybe it's a shock thing. Maybe it's a denial thing. Because once he
no
got home...
Ew, like,
yeah.
Psychotic.
Once he got home, he was scared to sleep in the house that their bodies were in. So he attempted to sleep in the car. Yeah. So he attempted to sleep
so
in the car.
So he was afraid of that, though. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was too cold, because remember, it's September, so it was chilly. So he goes back to his room, shuts the door, and turns his music up really loud, because apparently that's going to make you forget that there are dead bodies in your basement. I don't know.
Yeah, isn't that what everyone does after they kill someone? That's what I would do.
Right? Yeah.
That's eerie, though. That's super eerie. Ooh.
Oh, well. The next morning, then, it's a Sunday, so he goes to church. But he leaves early because the sermon was on crime and he thought it was about him.
That's interesting.
Yep. So he goes home. He borrows the neighbor's shovel, which I'm like, you should have just, I don't know.
And I'm guessing the people at church, he just told the same story about where his parents and stuff were at this point, too. And we'll kind of get
that's the, yeah, he sticks with that story. So
because I'm like, you think people would be like, hey, where are your parents? But where's his brother? He's still working.
His brother's
whatever,
with
right?
the Grossmans. Yeah.
Okay.
His brother's staying with Ruth Grossman and her husband and stuff. And so he borrows the shovel, but he doesn't do anything with it during the day. And he goes over to Crystal's and spends the day with her. But that night he uses the shovel to dig a hole in the backyard under a lilac bush. He then used his dad's belt and he tied it around his dad's ankles to help like drag him up the stairs. Ugh. And the thing is to get his parents' bodies into the backyard, he had to take them out through the garage and around to the back. So even though it was later at night, anyone could have seen him, because we'll get into this later, but he goes over to the Grossmans at midnight. So it wasn't that late at night that he would have been doing all of this.
No.
And now, mind you, September, it gets real dark real early. I don't know what streetlights were like in the 50s, but still. Anyone driving by or something could have seen this.
Yeah.
So after he gets both of his parents placed in the hole, he said a prayer for them and then buried them. He then took the rug and dumped it in the big Papillion Creek, which I think, don't they call it Papio Creek now or something like
that?
Yeah,
is that the same? I'm assuming that's the same.
I think so. I assumed. I don't know.
Just abbreviate everything now.
I know. So around midnight, he then went over to the Grossmans and said he was too scared to be home alone. And that's when Ruth noticed like that he had blisters all over his hands and stuff. And we'll get into this later, but Ruth is a true crime person already. You know, she's a sleuth.
Sleuth and hard.
Yes. So then on Monday morning, Les goes to his dad's business and opened it up, and he told an employee the same story that he'd been telling everyone else, and he gave him the keys to the store so he could open it.
I mean, at least his story stays the same so far, I think.
Yeah. It sounds to me like he said the same. Yeah, it sounds like it stayed the same the whole time. So after 5 days, Jim and Les then returned to their own home. And Les has still been going to school and everything like that. Him and Jim have. And Jim still has no idea what actually happened to his parents.
Because he thinks they're gone probably too.
Yep.
Because he knows
the
same story.
Yep. Okay. And yeah, Les never told anyone about it. He just kept the same story. But 8 days later after the murder on Sunday, October 5th, Les came home to find his grandparents at the house. And this is the same grandparents he'd been telling everyone his parents were helping.
Well, so maybe pick a different relative that's not going to show up at your house.
And I don't know if this was like maternal or paternal grandparents or what side this is on, but I guess they came from North Loop, Nebraska, which I've heard of.
Is there, like Loop City? Is that a thing?
I have no idea.
I've heard of that. I knew someone in college from there, but I don't know if that's the same place. But
they came up because they were concerned because no one seemed to have seen or heard from Opal or Bill for so long. And the grandma then even asked Ruth Grossman if Opal had said anything to her. And when Ruth relayed the story that Les had told her, grandma's super confused. She has no idea what she's talking about. She's like, yeah, that never happened. And this is where we get back to Ruth had been doing some digging of her own. She found out that there was no train that left the day or the time that Les said his parents had.
She was looking into it then, because that's like a lot of research, and it's not like they could just Google that. Like she went out
of her
way
to
look that up.
No, she probably had to go there or call them and be like, hey, at this day and time.
That's crazy.
She also learned from a friend a few houses down from the Arnolds about the violent arguments between Les and his mom. So it sounds like the arguments were for sure a thing. If neighbors knew about this, this means this woman was going around doing detective work and like questioning people. Yeah.
This is where the true crime obsession just was born. I mean, right? Way before that, but like, that's crazy cool.
Yeah. So it was interesting. And then, you know, sorry, I got distracted because a small child came into my bedroom. So then on October 10th, Ruth goes to the police and tells them what she knew. And now the grandparents haven't called the police at this point because grandma doesn't want to jump to conclusions. Yeah, you can come sit with me. So grandma doesn't want to jump to conclusions. So she's like, nah, we're not gonna do any of that. And however, Les's great uncle didn't feel the same way. And on October 10th, he also goes to the downtown police and he reports Opal and Bill missing. So on Saturday, Les was picked up by two detectives at his dad's business. So it sounds like he went to his dad's place of employer, like job, and like was working there. And once they picked him up, it did not take long for him to come clean about everything that had happened. And when they asked if he would show them where the bodies were, he said, if I have to.
Oh.
So he was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder. And this is where the gun thing comes into play, because the prosecutor felt that Les had loaded the gun himself before confronting his mother in the kitchen. So this would then make it premeditated.
Yeah.
But Les denies this and said that the gun was already loaded. And like 50s, I can see people keeping it loaded.
And having a gun like on the nightstand, even. I could see that back then.
Mom. Yeah. Oh, they're begging.
Okay, I'll have to cut a little bit of that silence out because she to tell me she was done painting with her watercolors.
I had to explain that upstairs like 8 times already. Yeah. Yep. I told her to be quiet, so, or at least give me a look so I can mute it while she's walking. But
Yep. So, he was charged, like I said. Yep. And so he had several psychiatrists evaluate him, and they all said that he was sane. One said that his mother's attitude towards him was a force in helping to precipitate the action, which, like, way to victim blame, dude. But
honestly,
and another
so it begins way back then. Never and ever goes away.
Yep. One second. Okay. Now she went back downstairs. Okay. So the other one says that he's like genuinely remorseful.
Okay.
So Les ended up pleading guilty to the lesser counts of second degree murder for both of them. So it was 2 counts of second degree murder on June 2nd of 1959. And he was sentenced to be imprisoned for life for doing hard labor for the remainder of his life. And he was put into the Nebraska State Pen, which is in Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that sounds like that should be it, right? Like, that sounds okay. Story's done. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're only halfway through now. There's still more to this
case. I'm wondering what the heck happens because I don't know this case at all.
Yeah. Okay, this little tidbit has nothing to do with the story, really, but I just thought it was an interesting factoid. So when Les was put into the state pen, Charles Starkweather was actually a prisoner there at the time, which for those of you who aren't from Nebraska or don't know, because this is an old case too, Charles Starkweather was a Nebraska serial killer whom I know one of us will end up covering at some point.
Yeah, because that one is amazing. I mean, it's not amazing. Sorry.
No.
Bad choice of words.
It's such an interesting case.
Yes, thank you. It's just, it's a crazy thing, and especially in Nebraska, you know, so.
Yeah. So, but he was put to death just 2 weeks after Les had arrived there. So that was just an interesting little factoid. Like, Les was in prison with Charles Starkweather for a minute.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean,
like, it well, and it's so crazy because I don't know, Charles Starkweather felt like it was such an old thing, which this case is too, but I don't know, it feels weird that they overlapped.
Yeah, like, what are the chances of that, you know?
Yeah.
Things were just crazy around that time, I guess.
Yeah. So now, something else to note is, like, Les was put into the state pen, like, 3 weeks before his 17th birthday, And
so young.
Yeah. And the prosecutor actually told him this, that he said, despite being given a life sentence, it won't be forever. Because at the time, the state's pardon board commonly commuted life sentences of killers to a set number of years, allowing them to be paroled. What the fuck? Now,
okay, then why is it called a life sentence? Like, nope.
Well, and I know even now they have stuff for, like, yeah, minors who have committed murders. Like,
yeah,
there are things. But adult, like, this is for any killer. I'm sorry.
That's not okay.
No, no, no.
I feel like even when people don't get, like, a life sentence for killing someone or the death penalty, regardless, I'm like, no, no. They should not get anything less severe than that. Regardless, yeah, you took a human life. I don't care if it was in the heat of the moment or not. Like,
yeah, yeah,
no, no.
Unless it's like self-defense or like, you know, accidental manslaughter or something. Yeah, happy, you know, like those are. But like, would you straight up not like an I'm intentional? Kill you?
Yeah, yeah. Nah.
So, yep. So state law dictated that Les would have to serve 10 years before being eligible. But given his age,
10.
Yeah. So he could have been like 27 when he got out, right?
Oh my gosh.
So given his age at the time of the murders, the lack of any prior record, and the quote-unquote complex nature with his mother, the prosecutor firmly believed that he would be paroled. This prosecutor's even quoted from 2007 as saying, when you build up all that resentment, sometimes it just blows up. That's what happened to poor old Leslie.
That's the prosecutor saying that?
That was the prosecutor. Damn. Who was like, I think you did this on purpose.
Yeah, okay, maybe he should have been fired. He sounds like a terrible prosecutor.
Well, and again, I mean, you got the patriarchy. He was like, well, if she would have been a better mom, yeah, he wouldn't have been 50s. Forced to kill her. You know?
So true.
Because Les was so young, everyone, even the inmates, were really protective of him in the state pen. And while he was there, he was a model prisoner. He finished high school. He became a tutor. He was in the prison band. He worked
There was
out.
A prison band.
Oh, there was a prison band. Yes.
Okay.
And he just kind of kept to himself, and he eventually asked a deputy warden, for a job in his office, which he granted him. So he was like an office runner, like running stuff around to different offices, eventually had his own typewriter and stuff. He still had visitors. Crystal's parents came to visit him because they had become his legal guardians.
Oh, and where did Crystal stand in all of this?
It doesn't say. I would hope that she was like, yeah, no.
I'm probably going to have to. It's not me. It's you.
Yeah. You
turns out
your parents because you couldn't take me on a date.
Obsessive much?
I don't want to be with you and find out what happens if I do something to not make you happy.
Hashtag I dated a psycho. Another yeah. show that oh, woman could be on.
Yeah. So his parents come to her parents come to visit him. A friend of his named Jim Child comes to visit him frequently, which Jim Childs will come back into play again.
Not brother Jim.
Oh my god, there's like three Jims in the story. Okay,
Jim is a very common name in this, yes, that time.
Yes. And then a nun from Omaha who had befriended him, which I mean, you know, I could go down the path of problems with the Catholic Church, but yeah, anyways.
Yeah.
So in 1964, he filed an appeal of his conviction, saying he hadn't been told of his right against self-incrimination, and that he had been locked up for 8 months before being given the plea deal to, quote-unquote, allow for publicity to die down. Unfortunately, his appeal was unsuccessful, which I could kind of see that. Like, if he gave in pretty quickly, I doubt he had a lawyer or anything there with him.
I know. Yeah.
So in 1965...
Because this was before, Miranda rights too. So no, I mean, he probably really didn't have.
Oh, did you Google
that? I just looked that up. Yeah, because I wondered, I knew that was later on, but it was 1966.
That
was a thing. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's interesting. I mean.
That is.
It makes you, I mean, not that it changes like that what he did, but still, no. I mean, he still.
Nowadays.
Could have been taken advantage of in the court system.
Mm-hmm. So, then in 1965, he became known as a trustee, and this is a prisoner with greater freedoms and privileges. And they're even assigned to live in a special dormitory that housed lower risk inmates. So this dormitory is outside of the main prison, but like still within the fenced perimeters.
Okay.
So while he's in this new dormitory at the age of 24, Les makes a pact with another inmate, Jim Harding, to escape. And now Jim Harding was 32 at the time and had a life sentence for killing a bus driver during a bar robbery.
Wow, he sounds like a great guy too.
Uh-huh. So they planned their escape with another inmate who was being paroled, which in an interview, Harding later was like, I can't believe he did it. Like, he must have been crazy because, like, he was out and free and this, like, risked everything.
Yeah.
But I don't think the accomplice was ever caught. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So they planned this escape and they planned it for July 14th of 1967. And the paroled inmate put an ad in the classifieds that said NOF arrives July 14th. And in this interview, Harding even says that he couldn't remember what NOF stood for, but it meant the plan was a go for the 14th.
Okay. And Les had already served like over half of his, when he could have been getting out.
He's pretty much like 3 years shy of getting out.
And he decides to do this.
And he decides to break out. I don't understand. I know I put that like towards the end. I was like, I don't understand why you already put in this much time, why you could have just held out for another like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, because I'm guessing this doesn't end well.
We'll find out. Okay. So, before the escape, this friend on the outside drives by late one night and tossed a cardboard tube over the fence. And Jim Harding always went for early morning walks, so it was easy for him to go snag it and it not be a weird thing, or look suspicious. Mm-hmm. So inside were two hacksaws, and they used these to remove some of bars that were on this dormitory. And some rubber masks. And, like, when I say rubber masks, think, like, those Halloween ones that you see in the old bank robbery movies where they have, like, Nixon's face or something. It's like that. Oh, my gosh.
Those are creepy, so.
Yeah. So, and this shit does sound like something out of, like, a prison break movie. So, on July 14th, the two men make up their beds using pillows and stuff and stuff them to look like they're in bed. And that's what the masks were for, to look like their heads.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Not for them to actually wear. Okay.
Yep. Because lights out was at 11 and a guard would come by shortly after to make sure everyone was in bed. So then they run to the fence, which, mind you, at this point, to get over this fence and stuff, they threw like a jacket over the barbed wire.
Did they have the whole thing with their clothes tied?
No, there wasn't any of that. But there was a guard tower just 100 feet away. And the only thing keeping them from being caught was sheer luck. They just had to hope the guard didn't look their way.
Wow.
And he didn't. So then they get over the fence. They run like 150 feet further through some trees. And then this friend is sitting there waiting with like a change of clothes. And he takes them to Omaha. And then he dropped them off and it was like a bowling alley north of 72nd and Dodge. I don't know if it's still there or not.
It's like crazy though, that this is all happens. I mean, in our area, cause it's like, oh gosh, this is kind of a crazy story.
Right. So while they're at this bowling alley, they have nothing past this point, right? They have no plan for past this point. So Les calls Jim Child, who I guess is home on break from seminary school. This man is going to school to be a minister.
Mm-hmm.
Les is like, hey, me and another inmate just escaped prison. Can you come pick us up from this location? What does this future minister say?
Please tell me. Sure. He says, yeah. Oh, okay.
He says, yeah, sure. Says, I'm going to do that for my good old pal Les.
I hope he failed school.
No, he became
graduated bottom of his class.
He was a minister because the article from 2006 or 7 or whatever from the Journal Star was Confessions of a Retired Minister. And he
talks
about
this. Did he get convicted?
This.
Are you going to talk about that at all later? Oh, nothing.
I didn't see
you
anything, which I don't know if time had expired. I would assume he talked to a lawyer before he came through with this to make sure he couldn't be charged with anything.
I mean, I would hope so. And maybe back in the 50s, too, it wasn't like this was really a common thing where they had certain laws said.
No clue. So he's like, yeah, I'll come pick you up. So he packs a bag of clothes, he makes some sandwiches, and grabs all the cash that he has, and takes his girlfriend with him to go pick up these two convicted felons.
Sure.
Who one you know for a fact has murdered two people. The other one, you don't know what this other man did. You don't know him at all.
What he's capable of. Yeah.
Which turns out he was capable of murder too. And in this interview, Jim was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have brought my girlfriend with me. Like, I was even thinking like, oh, maybe this was a mistake to bring her. You think? Maybe it was a mistake to help convicted felons.
Well, and why they're stupid to just stop in Omaha where the original crime happened for him anyway, where people could potentially recognize you.
Right. And at this point, it's like midnight or something. So it's later. Jim Child takes them to a bus stop and they like to a Greyhound and they take off for Chicago. And the thing is they had a far enough head start that like the police, the dummies in the bed worked.
Wow.
So
yeah. Well, and they probably just glanced if they know that they're good.
Well, you know, and something else in the article talks about. It talks about how there was no mention of these dummies and stuff like that in the escape reports. And so they think other inmates possibly helped take them out, like took the pillows and masks down later because there's also a check if people are still in bed after lights on or whatever they call it. So they would have had a decent head start. So they were already in Chicago by the time police even realized that they had escaped.
I was going to say, and it's not like they can track their phones and see them on surveillance cameras. Exactly. And stuff. What a time to be alive, I guess.
Yeah. So a few days after their escape, the FBI come to Jim Child. They're like, hey, have you seen him? And he was like, nope, sure haven't. It's like... Okay. And then when he goes back to California for seminary school, he's even pulled over by another FBI agent, was like, hey, have you seen Les Arnold? And he was like, no. And I guess the FBI agent was like, would you tell me even if you had? And supposedly Jim was like, I don't think I would. And I was like, okay, getting a little, okay.
Yeah. Wow. You're not really helping your case, I guess.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So, like, in Jim's thing, he said he never heard from Les again, which he was, at first, like, kind of mad about. But he was like, I hope he had a good life. I was like, this fucker killed his parents, made his brother an orphan.
Correct.
I don't understand.
How is there any sympathy for him? Like, yeah, that sucks that your parents favored your brother, but, like, maybe just...
Yeah.
Once you graduate, move on. It sounds like you had a lot going for you. You could have pursued. Yeah,
so much.
Wow.
So... Harding ends up being recaptured in 1968, and it was actually right around the time Martin Luther King Jr. had been killed, and someone in a bar in Los Angeles mistook Harding for MLK's killer. That's how he got caught, because they called him in thinking he was this other person. So he gets extradited back and he's back in jail, right? And he was like, actually, it was kind of a relief because, like, always looking over your shoulder and stuff was just tough. But, you know,
you're always going to get fed there and whatnot. Yeah,
exactly. So he said, you know, once they got to Chicago, their pact was done. Like, they weren't friends. Jim Harding didn't like Les and stuff. It was just they both wanted the same thing. So they went their own ways, but... Harding said, you know, when he got there, the last he knew, Les had taken a full-time job as a dishwasher and moved in with a woman, but he was never found. Les was never found.
What? And,
yeah.
It was worth it for him to escape.
Yes. Although Holy again, shit. 3 years shy and you could have just been living your life and not on the run.
Yeah, not having to, like, change your identity and whatnot, I'm assuming, but...
And so there are rumors of sightings of him... You know, but, like, nothing concrete, nothing substantiated. In 2017, though, new evidence surfaced that Les may have gone to Brazil. There's a card, which is a resident alien card, that was filled out by an American citizen, and it was Les's full name, his actual birth date, and the hometown of Omaha, Nebraska. And it actually got flagged right away by Interpol as this being a person of interest, because this was noted on the card. But then the article I read said there was another note on there that was kind of hard to understand, but pretty much it was either said he escaped or he wasn't found. But I guess, like, Brazil is pretty reluctant to extradite its own people, and they don't know if they just didn't try, didn't care. And, like, it's a big area. Like,
he and this was 2017?
That the card came out, but it sounds like this card was from shortly after he escaped. It sounds like he went straight to Brazil.
That would make more sense then, because it would be a lot harder to do that later on in life. I mean, with technology and whatnot.
Yep. So it sounds like he pretty much went there and got lost in South America, and who knows if he stayed living under his name, changed his name.
Right.
But that's where the unsolved aspect of this comes in, because no one knows whatever happened to Les.
So what year was he born? I guess I don't know.
For sure. I couldn't find his actual birth date, but the murders happened in 1957 or 58.
He was like 16-ish. So because I was like trying 40s. To see how old he would be now. I mean, he'd be like 80 or something, right?
Yeah.
If he's still alive. I mean,
yeah.
Technically, he could be alive. It's not like it's past that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe he actually got away. Too. Like, that's crazy. I know.
Yeah.
Wow. Especially for being that young. I feel like there's a lot of like rookie mistakes that you could make. They're just, I mean, but I guess once again, too, if you're going to escape from prison, the 60s probably would have been a prime time to do that.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah. So that's the case of Les Arnold.
Never heard of that. And that is in Omaha. That's a pretty huge case in the fact that he escaped and stayed gone.
On
the run. Like, that's insane.
Damn. Right? Like I said, like, the bear I knew was that he killed his parents at 16, went to prison, and then he escaped. And so I was like, okay, there's not too much. They're like going into it, and I was like, oh my god, there's so much more to this than I realized.
There could have been a whole episode just on his escape and all that. I mean,
really could have. But then this crazy thing is, too, is that, like, I couldn't find, like, a documentary or a, like, television show or anything on it. It was all just...
That's and, like, really bizarre, too, that there's not more about this case, because that's
it's one of those things that it's like, how is this not one of those popular cases on all the true crime podcasts? Because, like, I get that it happened in the 50s, but there's so many other cases that have happened later, way before that are like
this.
Everyone knows about, and there are all these things about, and I'm like, how is this not a thing? This
is it because it's Nebraska escaped? Like once again, the Midwest never gets coverage,
right?
Well, not never, I should say, but like other places.
No, I mean, I know Charles Starkweather, there was a movie made on him because my mom talked about her cousins in Spain asking her about it, like when they saw it even.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've even seen some of that. And I can't remember, well, in my law class in high school, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, how is there not one on this?
Yeah, that's just it. Like, how is there not something?
I don't know. That's pretty wild, though.
How was that not on, like, America's Most Wanted or Unsolved Mysteries?
Yeah. Yeah. That is,
I don't get it.
That's wild. I don't know. Yeah. I don't get it either. Well, thanks for sharing that one, because that's brand new to me. And I love those kind of cases that are like, I mean, I think about even Ted Bundy escaping like from prison and he got caught both times, you know, like, so it's crazy that this young kid got away with it. And I mean, given there's different, I mean, it was later on and there's probably better, you know, technology, but not like, I don't know. I feel like that's just crazy that this kid could get, I mean, he's probably living, well, maybe lived his best life. Who knows? Maybe his kids and, like, you know, the offspring. That's a little scary, too.
I mean, maybe he pissed off the wrong person pretty early on in Brazil and got offed. I mean, it's so hard to say.
That's true. So whatever happened with the brother, was there any information on him? Probably not, because it's so old.
I mean, he was kind of interviewed, and he was just like, he went through some rough shit that he didn't want to talk about. Uh-huh. And he pretty much was like, I'm over it. You know, I don't ever want to see or speak to him again, but I've forgiven him and stuff like that. And,
yeah. Wow.
You know, I'm
that's
like,
crazy.
I know.
And that's the thing that does suck about older cases, not being able to like pull up interviews and images and, you know, like there's very limited amounts of things. And we're that like, a generation that needs to see the things and watch the documentaries.
I know. Like I said, and his, I mean, it was like 2017 when this three-part Omaha World Herald article came out and stuff, and they did interview him, but the brother just sounded really reluctant to talk about his own life. I can imagine he went through some rough shit being orphaned at a young age, knowing your parent, you know, your parents,
your own brother killed them. Yeah. And that's traumatizing. And I feel like kids are mean. I mean, I feel like that's something too, that he probably dealt with his own bullying and things like that because of that stuff. So that's pretty shitty.
Yeah. So that is the case of Les Arnold, you guys.
You know, I gotta say, I'm glad to be back in a nice little true crime thing. I mean, I know we've done obviously tons of true crime, but the last few ones, I know it's been just like heavy, and not that this isn't, but this is just a wild case that.
Well, and it was like, there was so much more to it. And I feel like I kind of got into a little bit of a slump after covering all the indigenous cases. Yes. Just, I was like, oh my God, like so eye-opening and so heartbreaking. And so I think that's too where that break of all it's of like, this was kind of helpful to
a whole nother side of the true crime world that we just, I mean, it was hard, more emotionally draining, I think, than, I mean, and this one is just crazy. Like, that's a crazy case. Thanks for finding that one, because I didn't know that one. It's always fun when it's ones you don't know, which seems to be a lot of them. So that's good. I had a friend asking me the other day if we were going to cover a case. For those of you not from here or around here, there was a woman who was missing. It was a domestic violence situation, and they ended up finding her body fairly recently. And I had a friend that was like, are you guys going to cover that? And I'm like, no, not yet. I was like, it's still so new.
It's so new. And it's had so much coverage, though, too.
And that's the thing with all these newer cases. I mean, it gets pretty out there right away because of technology. But, you know, in some of those cases, it's like, we can always, I mean, touch on them. But, like, until the whole trial process and more evidence and stuff comes out, we just don't even know all the facts. So,
But, nope, exactly. And that's,
I like a good old case, so.
Yeah, you know, we want to try to, you know, as much as possible, highlight the lesser known cases too. And obviously her disappearance and stuff was very sad. I'm not saying it wasn't, but she's gotten a lot of coverage. Yeah. There's been a lot about her. So, and it's all still so ongoing.
Totally.
Too. And
so, to answer that question, we're just like, we're not news coverage people like right now. Like, I get it, like, I mean, those are good cases, but like we like to have the case done. I mean, most of them in the sense of like, we know what the outcome was, we know what the sentencing
and those
was,
ongoing and cases and stuff, with it still ongoing and still being so new, it's still so close to the family, and I don't want to accidentally re-traumatize anyone. You know, we always try to be respectful and kind. And even with covering, like I said, like the indigenous cases and stuff, you know, I was so glad we had the families reach out who did, and who were so grateful for what we said, you know, because I would hate to re-traumatize anyone. And that's not what we're trying to do here. We're just trying to spread awareness about some of these things.
Yeah, totally. So, that's good stuff. Thanks, Cassie.
Thanks. Getting back into it. Remember, you can follow us on all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Heartland Darkland Podcast. Our email is heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com. Email us anything, whatever.
Yeah, we love anytime we hear from you. It's always fun. And we love to talk about them with each other. Like, oh, did you see that nice message we got? So it's fun.
It is.
So we do look at them and talk about them in good ways, of course. So thanks, guys.
Yes. So thank you all. Just now, you know, it's 2023. I've set myself a reading goal of 100 books for the year.
Oh, dang. Mine's 30. Only because I went from like, I used to read all the time. And then as soon as I had my daughter, I like just, it was hard to find the time. And so just this last year, I set a goal to get back into it. And my goal was like 2 books a month, you know, and
you did great.
Hit that goal. So for me, I was like, So then this year I was like, what's something that's achievable? Like, I don't want to go too far. So I just said 30. My goal is, I mean, I hope I actually do read more than that, but so good.
No, I think that's great. So what I did, I said 100 because I listen to so many audiobooks, as I've said before, and
that's
true. Didn't track. So that's where I get it. So like 100 is probably lowballing it, but I said 100 total between audio and actual physical reading, but I want 20 of them to be physical books.
Yeah, that's good.
But I have already read 2 books this year. That's both good. Of them were the
within
most...
a oh my
mm-hmm. no we're yeah they the I each day. I read them each in one day because they were wow, adorable good. Oh, good. A cute little I think I'm Marco Polo'd you about like these cute little like
I'll have to listen.
The K-drama genre uh-huh. of young adult books, which I love me some K-dramas. They're super cute. The very first one I read was actually in November, and it was called Once Upon a K-Prom. It's like To All the Boys I Loved Before vibes. I want Netflix.
Oh, I love that. Yeah,
yeah. So I think you would actually really like the cutesiness of it. Like, it's just such a fun, lighthearted, cutesy thing.
Yeah. Sometimes so you then, just need some of those.
Yeah. So then the first book I read for the year was XOXO by Axio.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
So cute. And then I just finished Soulmates by Susan Lee, which was, oh, they're just heartwarming and adorable and feel good books. So
send us your book recommendations if you have any.
If you want my Storygraph info, I'll follow you if you want to follow me. Yeah, I'm on Storygraph.
I'm on Goodreads, but
I
might get on that too, but as of now I'm on Goodreads.
I like Storygraph because they have a thing so you can set your goal and stuff, and at the end of the year they'll give you a chart. Like you can go throughout the year and look at a chart and it'll tell like break down your reading habits and stuff like that for you.
Yeah. That's fun.
So yeah.
I know I just did the thing on Goodreads at the end of the year where it tells you like how many pages you read, your average book length, and I love that stuff. So that's fun. Yep. I'll have to get on there too. But
yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, send us the things.
Yeah.
And we can't wait to have you guys join us again, getting back in the swing of the new year.
Yes. So, I'm not going to go into it because we've got to figure out details and stuff, but we got some exciting stuff hopefully going on this year. So
yeah. Once we get stuff settled in and penciled in, whatever, we'll let you guys know.
But that there's some exciting things. So yeah, until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.